Thank you. And I'd like to start by thanking my co-author, Laurie Drinkwater, also at Cornell. So today I'm going to talk about my dissertation work, which is nested within a larger interdisciplinary study looking at the problem of nitrogen loss from intensive grain farming in the Mississippi River Basin and the resulting hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. I'm going to talk next about the ecological theory guiding that research, which has to do with recoupling the carbon and nitrogen biogeochemical cycles. And then I'll focus on work I've done on farms in the basin at the field scale, constructing nitrogen mass balances. I'll talk about the methods of that work, and then we'll highlight some preliminary results from the study. So I think most of you here know that humans have dramatically altered the nitrogen cycle on a global scale, which has had some important environmental consequences. The hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico is a particularly well-studied example. And you can see that the Mississippi River Basin is enormous. It covers about 40% of the land area of the lower United States, and it's dominated by agricultural lands. Since 1985, there's been approximately a 300% increase in the amount of nitrogen loading to the Gulf of Mexico. And we can look at this basin in more detail. This is a map at the county scale looking at an index of nitrogen leakiness that combines a simple county-level mass balance, the fraction of each county in crops, and the fraction of each county in tile drainage. And what I want to highlight here is that this small area of approximately 100 counties in the upper Mississippi River Basin is contributing disproportionately to the nitrogen loading. But what this map doesn't tell us is what is the variability at the field and farm scale within this region, right? So we know that this would be a region to target regarding this problem, but what are the practices that are most effective in terms of retaining nitrogen in farm fields? And we could divide those practices using a really coarse typology. We have the dominant agronomic approaches, which involve improving the amount of fertilizer taken up by the crop, and those would include things like reducing rates, improved placement and timing, some of the precision methods that we heard about earlier. And we could contrast those with these methods that are far more rare, but are suggested by ecological and biogeochemical theory to be more effective because they recouple nitrogen cycling with carbon cycling. So these are practices that tend to build stocks of soil organic matter, such as cover cropping, complex or longer crop rotations, or use of organic sources. And there are several different lines of evidence suggesting that the practices that recouple carbon and nitrogen cycling are more effective in terms of retaining nitrogen in fields. We have nitrogen saturation theory coming from the forest ecosystem ecology literature, results from long-term cropping systems trials that have compared different intact management systems over the long term. And then we also have evidence from these short-term, small-scale studies that are more mechanistic. Here's two meta-analyses I want to highlight. One that found that reductions in nitrate leaching averaged 70% with use of a non-legume cover crop. And then the second one is a meta-analysis of the N15 literature that we have in press, where we found that practices that recoupled carbon and nitrogen cycles improved total recovery of newly added nitrogen by 30 to 42%, whereas the fertilizer-based practices improved recovery from about 7 to 20%. So we have this evidence from long-term sort of experiments at university stations, and then we have short-term, more mechanistic studies. But what is really missing here is data from working farms looking at this problem. And so what I wanted to do is to look at how management practices in farm fields affect nitrogen mass balance. The hypotheses were that practices that increase coupling of carbon and nitrogen cycles will result in a lower nitrogen surplus and potential for loss across a really wide gradient of practices within the basin, from continuous corn to highly diversified grain farms. And secondly, that the proportion of total nitrogen coming from legume and sources would be inversely related to surplus. So to do this, I picked four study sites in the Corn Belt, two that are in this area known to contribute substantially to nitrogen leaching, the Des Moines Lobe area of central Iowa, which is the soil region, and then the Darby watershed of central Ohio. And then I picked two other study areas on the edge of the Corn Belt that are known to have a high amount of alternative farming practices in that area, because I wanted to capture that sort of wide diversity of practices. And so within each of those study sites, I started by interviewing farmers to construct a 5-year nitrogen mass balance for 2 cornfields on their farm. So I asked detailed questions about a most and least productive cornfield to sort of bracket the range of environmental conditions on the farm. And so for the corn year, I asked really detailed questions about fertilizer inputs, about nitrogen fixation inputs, and manure nitrogen. And then the exports were calculated from nitrogen removed and harvested crops, so I asked detailed questions about yield. And so what this simple accounting approach does is you can take the difference between inputs and exports, and the difference, the balance, if it's a surplus, indicates that there's potential for nitrogen loss from the system. And if there's a deficit, that's also problematic in that there's potential for degradation of soil nitrogen pools over the long time, over the long term. And then for each of these fields, we went back in time talking about a 5-year rotation. So I have a 5-year balance for each of these 2 fields. And so I did this on 90 farms in the basin over a 3-year period. So interviews were conducted between 2007 and 2009. And then I collected corn samples from as many of those farms as possible last year, and then I'm still in that process this year. I used a nested sampling design to collect legume samples from a subset of farms. So this was to improve the estimates of biological nitrogen fixation inputs. And then on an even smaller subset of fields, I used the natural abundance method, which is an isotope method, to actually measure nitrogen fixation inputs. So the results I'll show you today are based primarily on the interview and the corn data together with literature data or literature assumptions. And the next step will be to incorporate the results from these legume samples to improve the estimates of nitrogen fixation in the balances. So I want to highlight a few examples of the types of results that I'm getting from this study that are particularly interesting. So the x-axis shows all of the fields, and then the y-axis is the average nitrogen balance. So that's taking 5 years of data and expressing it on an annual basis. The different study sites are in the different colors. And what I want to point out here is the really large range and variability across fields in terms of nitrogen balance. I captured quite a large range, and so it's interesting to see we have a large number of fields here that are producing profitable yields, and yet they're operating with relatively small nitrogen surpluses. And it's important to ask, well, so why is it that we have fields up here with very large surpluses producing the same mix of crops as farms down here with really large deficits? And so to begin to address that question, I picked out a few management practices to show you. The x-axis is the nitrogen management practice, and the y-axis, again, is the average annual nitrogen flux, so taking 5 years of data. We have inputs, exports, and the difference between the two, which is the balance. So these first 3 practices are fertilizer-based practices, side dress, a split application between fall and spring, and surface broadcast applications of fertilizer. And I'm contrasting those were significantly different from this legume-based practice. And these are fields that greater than 70% of the total nitrogen input came from legume nitrogen sources. And then this appears just the sample size for the number of fields in those. And so there was a significant difference between the fertilizer practices that all had a surplus of between 32 and 34 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year, whereas the legume-based fields were roughly in balance, providing support for the carbon and nitrogen coupling hypothesis. And we also looked at how increased reliance on legume nitrogen can contribute to improved nitrogen balance. I divided this data up based on nitrogen rate, so low, medium, and high rates. This is data for the fields that were diversified in some way, so some portion of their nitrogen was coming from an organic source or they had a more complex rotation. And what I want to highlight here is that for really low nitrogen inputs, as you might expect, these fields are really close to balance regardless of nitrogen source, which probably makes sense. And then as you get to medium and high rates, there's a significant relationship between the proportion of nitrogen coming from legumes and then a smaller nitrogen balance. And I think what's really interesting about this result is that this is data from working farms. So given the large variability among all of these farms and among the different states, we're still seeing this pretty strong relationship in terms of the effectiveness of a legume at reducing nitrogen surplus. So some preliminary conclusions. The results show a really large range in mass balance across the 4 sites. So it's really important to understand how both environment and management are contributing to that variability. We found some initial support suggesting that practices that recouple nitrogen additions with carbon additions are more effective in terms of retaining nitrogen in farm fields. And finally, I think my results show that it's really crucial to collect this data from working farms. This is reflecting what farmers are actually doing, given the variability of the social environment in which they're operating. And so that data from working farms should really be our context for looking at the problem of nitrogen loss from farm fields. So thank you for your attention. I'd like to thank my funding sources, NSF Igart and the Coupled Human Natural Systems Program. I'd like to thank my colleagues in the Drinkwater Lab and the many farmer participants who are really patient in giving me their time in the middle of the growing season. So thank you.
We have about 3.5 minutes for questions.
Did you account for loss of ammonia from the plants? I mean, you use a simplistic model where it's just, export what's exported and input, and denitrification losses, planting losses, leaching losses are not accounted for. That's why that one graph was so heavily shifted to the left.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good point. What I was trying to highlight here is that this simple accounting approach is a really useful indicator for looking at the potential for nitrogen loss. So there's good data from the ecology literature, for example, showing a significant correlation between nitrogen surplus and nitrate leaching is actually measured in waterways. But regardless of the pathway of nitrogen loss, whether it's volatilization, denitrification, leaching, those are all problematic in one way or another. And so this approach is just showing the potential for losses, and I guess I should also say that I'm going to make some more judgments about which pathway it might have been based on environmental data I collected from each field, so soil type, whether or not there's tile drainage, slope of the field. I don't know if that... I would not imagine that the large proportion of the losses are volatilization, although I do have an N15 study going in Illinois where I can perhaps get at more of those mechanistic questions. But the point of this was to compare a broad range of management practices using this sort of simple indicator that's been shown to be useful across the field.
Your work in Nebraska showed that the plants could lose up to 80 pounds of N per acre per year through the leaves of ammonia. And the same thing goes for soybeans. That's not a problem necessarily, and those are losses that aren't accounted for in that model, and I think that this can be misinterpreted.
I think if you're a farmer, that loss is problematic if you're paying for that fertilizer and it's going out through the top.
Yes, but the geneticists haven't designed a plant that's not going to lose the N as ammonia. So if the farmer had an option to buy a better plant, sure, but he doesn't have that option.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think one of the things that's interesting about this study is that it is interdisciplinary, so we're looking at sort of the social drivers of the issue too, right? So there are, like you're saying, there are issues of profitability that could potentially be changed given different economic signals.
Time for one more question.
Have you looked at any economics of the different systems? Is the legume system more or less economical for a fish farm wide system?
I don't have that data yet. So in each of the interviews, I did ask sort of standard demographic and economic questions that I will be using in this. And then the larger project did a survey of farmers in the basin that's more representative that also had more economic questions. So I will be looking at that later on. And that is part of the point to see if those are not currently profitable, what are the ways in which they could potentially be profitable if indeed they are sort of the most effective at reducing the problem.
Real quickly, what kind of reception did you get from the farmers when you went to interview them about this topic?
It was pretty positive. I think I would have to say all the farmers I talked to are aware of the hypoxic zone. They're aware of the economic issue, right? They say, well, I don't want to pay for my fertilizer to go down the river. Like, that doesn't benefit me either. And so most of them were very willing to talk to me. And some of them were interested in things like cover cropping or legume use but just were explaining to me, given my current operation, that's not something I could incorporate right away, but that they thought they were interesting approaches.
Just a quick question. How did you choose? Did you look in the phone book and say, this is Joe Farmer? Mm.
Yeah, so my sample is not random. It's purposeful, and the goal was to capture a wide range of practices. And so I primarily went through Extension, NRCS, Soil and Water Conservation District, went through people who had contacts and could suggest people using certain practices, and then would call and ask if they would participate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent presentation.